You're tuned to Perspectives, a public affairs show which airs every weekend right here on KTEP.
In some ideologies, the notion that there are no coincidences may have played a large part in this particular episode of Perspectives. As we were preparing to tape the program, Louis Hines was informed of an impromptu media conference call by Republican Texas Senator John Cornyn from Washington, D.C., regarding the then 36-hour-long government partial shutdown. Both Louis Hines and Utah political science professor Jose Villalobos had the opportunities to ask two vital questions about the shutdown to Senator Cornyn.
Senator, this is Louis Hines from KTEP in El Paso, and we have with us Dr. Jose Villalobos from the Political Science Department who wants to ask you a question.
Certainly.
Hi, Senator. I just have a quick question about, for the long term, at least for the rest of this year, for public opinion, the polls are showing that there's a pretty much of a split of how people are going to lay blame for this shutdown occurring. And I, from my perspective, I see coming from two angles that on the one hand, you have members, Republicans in Congress, people like Ted Cruz who did his semi-filibuster attempt, and that they really feel like they were sent there by their constituents to continue fighting against Obamacare. And so there's a sort of public demand side for Republicans on the one hand. And on the other hand, it's this sense of among Democrats that they're really, I mean, the president has this landmark piece of legislation that he's gotten under his belt through the legislative branch, and the Supreme Court has decided on it, on its constitutionality. And so I just don't see where things are going to come in the middle. But really, for the public, for those that are not hardcore Republicans or Democrats, for all those moderates that are looking towards the future and what they're going to want to see in government, where are they going to ultimately land in their opinion of who is to blame and what's going to be a way to move forward and not have this happen again?
Well, Professor, I would hope that the blame game is inextricably wound up in political life, at this point I would hope that we could have people on both sides of the aisle looking for a solution. I do believe that the position that the president and the Democrats are taking, which is apparently that Obamacare is perfect and you can't change anything, number one is, as you know very well, perhaps better than most, there's nothing permanent about any legislation that's passed by the Congress. A subsequent Congress can amend it. Of course, it has to get the support of both houses and a signature of the president, which has practical constraints. But the president's own actions have undermined any suggestion that something about Obamacare can't be changed, because he's changed numerous provisions unilaterally. Some might even say lawlessly. But we are asking that if the president thinks that employers should have a one-year delay and the employer sanctions, that individual Americans should have a one-year delay in the individual mandate, for example. Your other point is, yes, it's true that Republicans are unified in our opposition to Obamacare. I think that's been true certainly in my case since we first voted on it on the Senate floor on Christmas Eve in 2009. And I make no apologies at trying to replace this piece of legislation with one that will actually work and will meet the promises upon which health reform was advertised. This one certainly has not. But at some point, after we tried to move this legislation through the United States Senate, I think at some point people want us to resolve these issues. That doesn't mean we're going to give up these fights, and there will be opportunities to fight this fight later on. The one that perhaps has the best chance of occurring when it comes to Obamacare is if Republicans pick up 6 members of the United States Senate in 2014, we'll have a majority in both houses, and I think then our leverage at reforming and replacing Obamacare will be much improved.
Senator, this is Louis Sines with KTEP in El Paso at the University of Texas at El Paso. You just mentioned the veterans, and of course here in El Paso, as you are well aware, Fort Bliss is here. We have a lot of veterans. We have a lot of soldiers. We have also here on the border, we have a lot of issues with disease, disease control, and the fact that if some of these places shut down, there's going to be a huge problem as far as health issues and issues with the veterans and a lot of the deployments, you know, the soldiers who have families here because they're in Afghanistan or they're somewhere else around the world.
Well, Louis, the I'm glad the one little bright spot out of this current impasse is we were able to come together 2 days ago to deal with paychecks for our active duty military and to make sure that they wouldn't suffer any break in their income because, of course, many of them are, as you described, living under very constrained financial circumstances. Many of them deployed abroad, and they ought to be the last ones who would suffer hardship as a result of this impasse. But there are many other important functions, as you described, that need to be funded at some level. We have disagreements in Congress about the size and the role of the federal government, but the functions you all mentioned are ones that you just mentioned are ones that on which there is bipartisan and, I dare say, universal agreement. So that's the reason why we need to break this impasse, which is another reason why I'm glad the president has finally relented and agreed to have a meeting this afternoon with congressional leaders. And I hope he will cancel his trip to Asia and stay on the job here in America where this, as long as this impasse continues, because I guarantee that members of the House and the Senate are prepared to do so. And we would hope that he would stay here on the job with his sleeves rolled up and fully engaged until we get past this.
Okay, we just finished joining Senator John Cornyn in Washington, D.C. For a conference call regarding the shutdown of the government. And joining us today are Drs. Jose Villalobos and also Gregory Rocha from the Political Science Department. And you heard Dr. Villalobos ask the senator a question. And Dr. Rocha is with us as well to talk a little bit about what happened, what's going to happen, what may happen. Of course, if they knew what was going to happen, they'd have a lot of money right now. But anyway, we're going to discuss that and kind of summarize the senator's comments. And gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us here today. And first of all, let's start with you, Dr. Villalobos. What did you think of the senator's comments?
Well, I thought he defended his positions pretty well, and what you expect, he's very good at what he does. I think he did answer a good portion of my question, although the one thing that I think he didn't get around to, and I know it was a kind of a long question, but where ultimately the public is going to land on this, I think that for people who are strong supporters of anti-Obamacare Republicans that send people to Washington like Ted Cruz to do this kind of thing, to just continue to fight Obamacare to the end, although there is that sort of driving demand for them to take this kind of action, it doesn't seem like it's going to end with the result that they want. And so, you know, looking at when you think about both rhetoric versus performance, ultimately, if something significant doesn't happen to impede Obamacare, most people are going to just feel more frustrated. And even among the strongest supporting Republicans, voters out there, they may just say, you know, why do we go through all this trouble and have, you know, people's paychecks held back and all of this? If it, you know, did we have to do it over this particular point of time on this on the budget issue? Would there probably be other opportunities to do something? And we don't know, but you know, it doesn't look like the Democrats are going to back off of it. And it's the president's signature domestic policy. And he doesn't look like he's going to back off of it. So you have to wonder, you know, so that doesn't seem like there's a high likelihood that for a major Republican success. It'll be anywhere from not being able to do it to some kind of a washed down result that will engender some more frustration. On the other side of the aisle with the Democrats, the more that this discussion comes forth and you hear the arguments made by Senator Cornyn and others, from the side of Republicans of why doesn't the president give a little bit of wiggle room, and why doesn't the Senator Reid and others come more towards the center, regardless of whether the legislation has already been settled in the Supreme Court and through the Congress for the majority of its of the near future. It seems to me that there is going to be, you know, I mean, the polls show it. There's going to be a good amount of blame there as well. The very last question we heard was about the president doing things unilaterally. The president might have calculated things a little bit differently and also made another change for the individual as opposed to just the businesses. Maybe that would have been something. But with the state of Congress that's in today, I think the Republicans would have still gone after the bill with any remaining disagreements that they have. So it doesn't look like it. It looks like the overall trust in government is going to continue to take another hit. It looks like both the president and Democrats and Republicans are all going to get more of a hit. The overall approval ratings of Congress are at a historic low, and it just doesn't bode very well for getting people excited about 2014 or 2016. If anything, there's just going to be a little bit more of this underwriting sentiment that people are getting tired and more tired of these longtime incumbents that are continuing this partisan polarization. And then there's going to be a new kind of sentiment about, well, now that we're sending new people like Ted Cruz, and then they're getting in with new, there's sort of this new blood, but this new blood is more partisan. So do we want to have a different type of member of Congress sent to Washington, one that is going to change things to a less partisan type of dynamic? And that's the big, tough question. That's very hard to figure out a way through this sort of partisan polarized stalemate that continues to get worse and worse and worse.
One of the things that the senator did not answer, and we asked it, but you know, as you know, politicians sometimes kind of you know go the other way. Dennis Wu, our producer, mentioned it. What about the trickle down effect, especially in El Paso, because we have so many. Government workers. We have the WIC program. We have a lot of the situations with diseases and stuff like that. Dr. Rocha or Dr. Villalobos, either one. As far as the trickle down effect, what's going to happen? Because everybody right now is just going, well, the government shut down. What does that mean?
It means they don't get anything, and that's the essence behind this, Louis. And until they reach some kind of solution to this, things will remain as they are. And as I think we heard from the senator, this is very, very important politically to them. The sooner they resolve this, the better off they're going to be. But based on what I've heard from the senator, well, we've got a ways to go. Maybe the president will come up with some kind of rapprochement there with his colleagues. But that we're just starting this, and I think the expectation is this could take a while because, as Dr. Villalobos said, the sides are so far apart and so polarized right now.
Dr. Villalobos, you heard the senator say more than once, I hope he cancels his Asia trip. And some people might be listening and saying, well, wait a minute. If the government is closed, why is the president still taking trips? And so if you would comment on that and also kind of give us an idea as far as to how the rest of the world is reacting to this. Do they see kind of something advantageous for them, et cetera? Especially when a couple of weeks ago we were talking about, you know, what may happen or not happen in Syria.
Right. Well, you know, this is a lot of rhetoric here about people canceling their trips and clearing their schedules. Because if you can just imagine the kind of schedules that both the president and members of Congress all have to deal with. And this is nothing new of having things brought to a stalemate. So I don't think there would be a lot of praise going around if everybody completely cleared their schedules and just sat around, you know, for what is it that historically I've been hearing people talking about anywhere between 1 and 21 days. We're now on day 3 now. If it's going to take 3 weeks or what if it goes further than that, it's not very practical to think about people completely clearing their schedules. But as in all politics, there's always some kind of response. So you hear about maybe the president paring down some of his schedule. And it's embarrassing when you think about internationally. People are always kind of looking to the U.S., this beacon of democracy, right? And any time we come to this kind of stalemate and impasse, there's kind of a scratching of heads, and there's also a less familiarity about how the system works. But it is sort of, you know, it's difficult maybe to also translate what exactly is going on, and why is it that there's such a strong, willingness to have even, you know, this sort of budget shutdown occur. It makes things very difficult. And if I could also follow up on the trickle down issue, you know, I'm teaching my course on Congress this semester, so this is although this is very a horribly depressing thing, it's also, you know, in class we have some good discussions going about what does this all mean, and how does it compare with the past shutdown, and what to expect for the future. The trickle-down question, I think, is a great question you asked, because ultimately that's the whole point, right? It's how people are affected. And people are being directly affected, and they're going to be very frustrated and angry with all good reason. And then the question is, well, what happens with all that frustration and anger? How does that translate back into our democratic system? How does that go back into the next elections? How does that translate into some kind of a change where we tell our members of Congress and all our elected officials, we don't want business conducted this way. We want to have, you know, the next time around, things to get done, your responsibilities to be upheld. And that's one of the hard things about looking at Congress and studying congressional history, because of all of the redistricting and gerrymandering, right? Because we have all these people who are, the trickle-down effect comes to them, they feel it in their pocketbooks, they feel it even, you know, emotionally for the things that they care and believe in and the work that they do. And then they say to themselves, well, okay, so if I'm upset with what the members of Congress are doing, what am I going to do with my representatives next time around? But we've had for years and years this sort of districting and gerrymandering that has left most of the country with these districts that are very hard to have any change occur in the district. You have people in very, you know, there's less competition in elections. There's a sense that people are safe in their districts. There's fewer districts that are up for grabs. Where they are up for grabs is more in the primary elections. So you might say, well, if I have whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, if I have somebody representing me that didn't do a good job avoiding a shutdown or fighting for, you know, keeping the government going, maybe I can come up with another person, even if it's the same party, who will have a different outlook, a different approach, less partisan approach. That might be the way through this, at least for the time being, because there doesn't seem to be anything that we can do to reverse all of that gerrymandering. We have these very strongly aligned districts, either red, Republican, or dark, very blue for Democrats. So maybe it's just it's a matter of if we can't get past, you know, making more competition between the two parties, then there has to be some inner competition between each party and telling people telling their elected officials, we're sick and tired of people putting partisan politics and the horse game of who's going to win and who's going to lose above my paycheck, above my livelihood, my safety. You talked about some of these important border issues, and you hear the politicians just sort of glazing over them. Well, don't worry about it. You know, don't worry about people's safety and people's humanitarian issues that are going to affect people's health and security. You know, they're just all, you know, very quick to just focus on blaming the other party, and people are getting sick and tired of it.
How is it that the political experts on all of the networks during the first day of this shutdown have all pointed towards the Tea Party movement and how they're focusing their efforts on the Republicans who are not part of that? How is it that a movement that has no leader has so much push on something like the Republican Party?
I think when we talk about that, Dennis, we're talking about fear among Republicans, not so much among the Democrats. But as we just heard from Dr. Villalobos, you know, how do you make these elections or these primaries or this election process more competitive? Well, it is within the Republican Party, and if you notice, for instance, the minority leader in the House, in the Senate, Senator McConnell, has a pretty strong challenge from the right. And right now, I think that the Republicans are very concerned that it's possible that they could have a challenger from the right if they don't adhere to this position. And for that reason, I think as much as anything else, they're quite concerned. So there's a lot of at stake electorally. And more than that, I think that as the Republicans look down the road to 2014, they have to win this. particular battle, if you want to call it that, politically. Because without that, there's going to be pretty low voter turnout among Republicans in the general election. And all of a sudden, they move from thinking about winning elections and gaining control of the Senate to just trying to hold on to the House.
As far as what you've been talking about, Dr. Villalobos and Dr. Rocha, about 214, and some people are wondering, well, the president really has nothing to lose besides, you know, his legacy, the what is going down. But does the fact that he's a lame duck have something to do with this, Dr. Villalobos?
Well, I mean, I think looking at President Obama's position, he had a very close call with the Obamacare, right, with the Supreme Court. Even took the networks a little while to get the decision right, so there was some confusion there, we would call that. But yeah, he's looking now at what is going to be his legacy. And he's got so many different problems at his desk right now that are sort of unresolved issues that he has the time left to do something about them. So even though he's not up for re-election, even though he's kind of on his way out, I think for him, just like with George W. Bush before him, in this kind of atmosphere, it's very difficult for a president to get reelected. So that's a huge achievement. But once reelected, it's also very difficult for a president to go out on a positive note more so these days than maybe before. You know, when you look back at Reagan and Clinton, you had two presidents who, you know, they had their own challenges, major controversies at the end of their second terms going as they were leaving office. But they seemed to be able to come out of it with an overall positive legacy, people looking up to them for sure, right, on both sides of the aisle. They have sort of that, and people are continuing to make comparisons and look back to learn from what they were able to do. George W. Bush, in the time that we have been keeping track of approval ratings of presidents, George W. Bush had the highest and lowest approval ratings from the time that he was, you know, after the 9/11 attacks, he had that spike up above the 90s to the end of his term where he got the lowest approval rating numbers to that, you know, the 2006 midterms. And he came away, you know, it's still too early right now to tell what his ultimate legacy is because it's still sort of being debated. We still have the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan and all of this being played out. But Obama's facing the same kind of thing. You know, he came into office with all this excitement, with this long coattails that he brought other members of Congress with him into office. And then he suffered what many presidents do in midterms. He lost seats. He's now he was able to get reelected. But now is this time, this sort of crucial time where if he comes off with some good field goals, if you will, getting a few key things done, it will go a long way in helping his legacy. If he leaves the presidency with a lot of these things still hanging in the air, unresolved, it's going to be very hard for him to have a lasting legacy that will be sort of similar to, let's say, Bill Clinton. And I think he is concerned about that. I think one of the things he doesn't want to do is leave office having had John Boehner and other key Republicans put him in a corner. And so because he's not worried about reelection, I think right now he's trying to stand his ground. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you know, you think about George W. Bush or Barack Obama, you think about where the president is at, whether it's Nancy Pelosi challenging George W. Bush or Senator Boehner or Ted Cruz or whoever challenging Barack Obama, they don't have a lot of incentive to let their opponents have, you know, get the better of them or back them into a corner because they have that the higher amount of pressure of being commander in chief, being leader of the free world, and they have a lot of other options. Like the senator mentioned, Senator Cornyn said, you know, they have, if the Congress doesn't want to work with them, there's a number of things they can do unilaterally. And unfortunately, we don't want to see our branches of government separate, but the incentives are there for them to do whatever they can to leave behind their legacy, the things that they believe in. I mean, Obama believes in Obamacare. He's not about to, after having the Supreme Court, you know, sort of in some ways miraculously, you know, come out with a victory for him. He's not going to just now give things away to the Republicans over this budget.
Everybody talks about the good old days. Everybody wants to be a Monday morning quarterback. And, of course, yesterday, a couple days ago, actually, when people were still fighting in Washington, the subject of one of the most famous presidents came up, and that's President Lincoln and his quote, "A house divided cannot stand," and the fact that what he had to go through to keep this country together, and then Reconstruction, et cetera, after the Civil War. We haven't really gotten to that point, but I'm sure that they were kind of using examples like that, that we need to all stick together, correct?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the point about the Tea Party was very good earlier because, you know, I was mentioning this idea of competition during primaries. And in the last few years, the Tea Party movement, as it emerged in an opposite direction of what I was saying. You know, is this, you have the mainstream Republicans, and what you have is this people who are upset that things aren't getting done as well as they'd like them to have. And so you have a movement that pushes the party further away from the center to have more unity within a party. And the Democrats can do the same thing. We've seen it, you know, in the past to some extent as well. And so when you think about, you know, Lincoln's quote, the question is ultimately goes, you know, to the American people, what kind of members of Congress do they want to see in office? And there's that incentive to say, you know, well, if I'm a Republican, I want a Republican who fights for the strongest conservative values. And if I'm a liberal, I want someone who has the most liberal values. But if we can get to a point where people demand, you know, compromise and something that's, you know, focused on helping public policy move forward, if that sort of it becomes the next turn, I think that can be very positive. If we continue down the same road of electing people who are going to stand firmer ground against their opponents, I just see apathy and more frustration and disappointment coming our way.
Well, Dr. Villalobos and Dr. Rocha, Dr. Jose Villalobos and Gregory Rocha, thank you very much for being with us here today. I'm sure that we will be back again shortly. And earlier we joined Senator John Cornyn live from Washington as he held a conference call with reporters, a lot of reporters from Texas, and of course our thanks to Kate Martin, who is Senator Cornyn's press aide. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for being with us here today.
Thank you very much,
Louis.
The full recording of the conference call with Louis Sines and Jose Villalobos, along with other Texas media and Texas Senator John Cornyn, is available on our website, ktep.org, as well as this episode and others under the heading of Perspectives.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, producer, and reporter, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.